Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Monday morning, that means my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And, of course, it's the time for the Monday morning movie reviews, which we're about to jump into right now. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to review all the new movies. And then Eric and I talk about the box office for the weekend as well. And a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about some more Halloween costumes and some Halloween stuff in general. And we might play a little of the Scary Sounds CD. So that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let's get the guys here, Eric and Colin. Here's Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
Hey. All right, before we get into the new movies, there's a lot to talk about, actually, this week. Colin, you wanted to mention that the McHenry Drive-In is doing something pretty cool next week.
Yeah, they've been doing this thing every year where starting in August when, you know, the movies that are coming out, you know, just aren't that great. So they've been doing these retro double features or sometimes triple features, which is the case next week, every weekend. So next weekend they're doing the triple feature of the original Dracula, Frankenstein, and Wolfman at the drive-in. So,
that's great.
Yeah, on Chapel Hill Road in McHenry, the McHenry Drive-In is thriving and, you know, voted one of the best drive-ins in the country. And yes, there are still many drive-ins out there, many, you know, being a relative term, but more out there than you probably think. So next weekend on Friday and Saturday, October 20th and 21st, I think the show probably starts at around 7:30, but they open their doors at 6:30, and, you know, you could just go and enjoy these movies on a big screen out in the great outdoors.
Yeah. Well, and these are three classics, the classic old Universal horror movies. We just talked to the author of a book about the Universal monster movies.
Yeah, and they're not that long, you know. They're only like an hour or, you know, hour and 15 minutes, so they're able to do three of these, you know, in one night.
Right.
And it's a real treat. I mean, it's a terrific drive, and it's, you know, like a lot of these establishments, it's kind of, you know, family owned, you know, run, you know, with great heart and care. And so, you know, I love these. I look forward to this every year. I went to we were there. Back in late August for the double feature of The Sandlot and The Outsiders, which was a lot of fun. So,
that's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, if people want to learn more, go to goldenagecinemas.com. Golden Age Cinemas, they run the Liberty Theater in Libertyville and then the McHenry Outdoor Theater. And they'll get more details there.
Yeah. And our good friend Mike Kurz and Mia Kurz, they run a drive-in.
The
Midway Drive-In in Dixon, and
yeah.
They're closed for the season, but you know, during the summer, that's what they do, and they've, you know, keeping it alive as well. And it, you know, they had to spend a lot of money to get the digital, you know, transfer,
mm-hmm.
And so, but that's just something that it's run by the family and their friends. So also another great place too. So the McHenry Drive-In, yeah. Frankenstein, Dracula, and the Wolfman, all the original Universals. It'd be great to see on the big screen for Halloween. Outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. All right, Colin, why don't you start us off with Loving Vincent?
Okay. This is an animated film about the life of Vincent Van Gogh, and it's told in that sort of Citizen Kane structure where the life story, or particularly the days leading up to the death, are dissected and examined to try and figure out just how and why he died. And the story takes place a year after Van Gogh's death, and it begins with a postmaster asking his son to deliver Van Gogh's final letter to its proper recipient. And he's reluctant to follow through on this task, but finds himself meeting several lovers and contemporaries and acquaintances of Van Gogh who shed light on his life while also making the mystery deeper and leading to a few dead ends. And, you know, everyone has their own theory about how and why he died. And we see many flashbacks to reveal more layers. And so I said it was an animated film, and it's, you know, it was acted before it was animated. Douglas Booth plays the investigator, and Chris O'Dowd plays the postman. Saoirse Ronan plays an important woman in Van Gogh's life. So, so it has a kind of rotoscoping technique to it. But the thing that makes this even more unique than that is that it is the first fully painted animated feature. So every frame of film you're seeing is hand painted. Mm. And so you see all these beautiful brush strokes in there. And of course, it's all done in the style of a Van Gogh painting. And it is really something beautiful to look at. And it's kind of stunning, the ambition. It took about 125 painters to make this thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just wish the story was a little more worthy of it. And there are times when the technique is really overwhelming the scene or the story that's being told. As beautiful as the film is to look at, there are moments that are just, you just realize that only cinema can do really well, whereas an oil painting just doesn't cut it. And there are times when the technique is distracting, and you're not really getting the weight of the scene that, like you would if it was live action. So it's kind of a, you know, the technique is astounding for better and for worse. And sometimes it's a detriment. But nevertheless, the ambition behind this thing is extraordinary and really makes the movie worth seeing on the big screen. Even if there are, you know, even if the technique doesn't always work, it's something that, you know, I think people should seek out, especially if they're interested in animation of any kind.
Wow. Okay. All right, that's Loving
it's
Vincent.
It's only playing at the Music Box, so.
Yeah, it's only at the Music Box, so, and that's Loving Vincent. Okay, all right, let's go on. Eric,
mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell us about Professor Marsden and the Wonder Women?
Okay, well, this is, excuse me, based on the true story of William Marsden. The movie is played by Luke Evans and his wife, Elizabeth Marsden, who are both college psychologists, married at a time when men obviously were, you know, had the authority in public, even though his wife is just as smart, just as equal, might even be more so than he is. The two of them at the school come across a student of his named Olive Byrne, was played by Bella Heathcote, and clearly some sort of attraction between him and her, even though he kind of denies it. Soon that the three of them are sort of involved in this kind of this, you know, dancing around this idea of a relationship between who's flirting with who's, you know, really interested in who. And funny enough, this actually leads to a breakthrough in regards to an experiment that the two of them have been working on, particularly his wife, that leads to the invention of the modern lie detector. So as that's going on, the relationship begins to take on greater significance, and they sort of give in to their passions. We discover who's really sort of in love with whom, and soon the three of them are involved basically in a relationship altogether. And this begins to inspire him to further the concepts of love that he's been talking about. He's kind of a second-rate Kinsey in a way. And this leads him to discover the popularity of comic books. And he comes up with, obviously, as the title suggests, the creation of who would become Wonder Woman. And this is sort of based on the sort of the instincts and the characters embodied by his wife and their mistress, the student. And they sort of, they begin to discover sort of underground kinks and things that are sort of suggested in the comic book. The idea of the lasso of truth obviously has basis in both the lie detector and the sort of the kinks of the day.
Okay, hang on, Eric. We got to take a break, and we got the news here coming up. Eric, hang on, and Colin, hang on, and we'll come back. We'll find out more about Professor Marston and the Wonder Women and what Eric thought of that, plus a lot of other movies to talk about this week. But we got a break here for the news, and we'll come back afterwards with more movie reviews right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? It's Monday. Monday morning. My dad will call in and tell a joke. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. So let's get back to the movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning for the movie reviews, and then we'll talk about the box office as well. Lots of movies to talk about this week, and before the break and before the news, Eric was telling us about the Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. And welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So continue. What did you think?
Well, I mean, obviously this film and the subject matter could not be more timely, given the success of the Wonder Woman feature that came out this summer.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is an R-rated film, and it's certainly not something for the same audience. This is not something parents are going to want to take their kids to if they want to discover, you know, where the origins of Wonder Woman really came from. And that being said, you know, because this film is, deals with a unique relationship, particularly for the time, also then kind of delves into the kind of the underground fetishes of the time, and you know, still of the time, you know, it's never really gone away, because this film has trouble kind of selling us on the second rate Kinsey, and that's at times what this film sort of feels like when in the early scenes when he's, you know, with his theories about love and romance and stuff like that. By the time it starts delving into further into their relationship, it certainly becomes more about that, and the Wonder Woman stuff is kind of an afterthought in a way, even though there's a sort of a flashback structure where he's defending the Wonder Woman character to like a decency board. And that stuff feels very second rate, very TV movie-ish as well. And like I said, because, you know, we're never really sold on this, you know, the screenplay for this thing and really kind of selling us on what we hope the Wonder Woman character is really about, it feels like the film is just kind of softening its edges, and it just, it seems like it's covering up the fact that maybe this guy was really just, a kinky guy that liked to see women be tied up and then channel that into his comic books. There have been things that have been written about this guy that have suggested just as much, but this film takes the more romantic approach to that. It just doesn't really say anything really that interesting about a relationship of this type during that time. I mean, this film even has one of those ridiculously laughable scenes where the three of them are doing their thing in their house, and they just happen to leave the door open, so one of the neighbors walks in on them, and then, you know, it's like, oh, there goes the neighborhood kind of scene. It's a film that I just never really bought from the outset, and the further it delved into that kind of stuff, it just felt just kind of just never really fully formed, and it feels like a real missed opportunity on what could have been a really adult, an interesting adult subject, instead of just, giving us this romanticized, print the legend kind of approach to the material. The film was written and directed by Angela Robinson, whose only previous features were the movie Debs and Herbie Fully Loaded. So I don't think she was necessarily the right person for this material, and I don't think the approach he took really didn't win me over at all.
All right, so that's Professor Marston in The Wonder Women. Okay. All right, Colin, tell us about Marshall.
All right, well, this is a kind of a biopic of sorts. It's a true story movie about Thurgood Marshall, and he is played by Chadwick Boseman, who, of course, also played Jackie Robinson and James Brown in their respective biopics. But this isn't a standard Cradle to the Grave film. Actually, this is a courtroom drama in which Thurgood Marshall is brought in to help with a case of a white woman, played by Kate Hudson, who is thrown from a bridge by a black man, played by Sterling K. Brown. But she survived and is now prosecuting him. And Josh Gad plays Sam Friedman, a Jewish lawyer who is also brought in to help with the case. But at the assistance of the judge, played by James Cromwell, only Friedman will be allowed to speak during the trial on the behalf of Sterling K. Brown. Because Thurgood Marshall is black, he is forbidden to make any statements during the proceedings. So the film becomes about how these two characters work that out while also dealing with the racial tension that is brought about in both of their lives during this time. Marshall for just being black, and for Friedman, who agrees to work with him in defending a black man. This is a movie that takes place in the South. So the movie is really just about these two characters and their relationship. So, how Friedman is kind of intimidated by Marshall's kind of track record and confidence and just willingness to stick his neck out for something like this, at great personal risk. And, as a courtroom thriller, it's pretty standard stuff. There's a bit of a mystery element to it. And you're never really, quite sure what really happened. But of course, once the movie fills that in, it becomes, pretty obvious. So, I mean, in that respect, it's nothing new. But I do admire the approach of just not trying to do your standard Cradle to the Grave biopic on what a great man Thurgood Marshall was and how important he was to the civil rights movement. That would be just more of the same that we typically see at this time of year. I think doing it as a courtroom drama, I think, is a smart move. And really, the movie is mainly worth seeing for these two performances of Boseman and Josh Gad. There's a real chemistry between these two that is, I think, really wonderful to see. And I think the courtroom drama stuff, I ate it up. I thought it was pretty, you get the sense that they're taking some liberties with the story, and things probably didn't play out the way they did here, but one of the courtroom scenes has really one of the funniest moments of the year that kind of makes you question a typical movie trope that we've seen 100 times involving kidnapped victims. I think the movie is worth seeing. It's not great. It's not perfect. Some of the stuff that they try to do to convey the period, it's a little awkward and, it's a little movie conventional, but for a courtroom thriller and a biopic, featuring two very good performances at the center of it. I mean, I'd rather see this than, another, Trumbo or even another 42 or, something like that. No, this is a good movie about two really interesting characters from this time period and a good solid history lesson.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I liked it. I really did. I thought it was a solid piece of work with really, really good performances. And boy, it's been a really good year for Sterling K. Brown, man. And he's a terrific actor, and he's really good in this. I want to mention Reginald Hudlin directed this movie, and he's known mostly for comedies. He did The House Party, and a couple of other films, but he did Boomerang. So he's mostly known for comedies, and he does a great job with this, although there are funny moments in it. There are some very funny moments in the movie. And I was really surprised at how much I like Josh Gad, because I don't like him very much. But he's really good in this movie. And you're right. The combination of those two, the chemistry between the two of them is really great. And that's movie. That's basically what the movie is about. And I think it's an interesting approach, like you said, Colin, because, you know, we all know this is well before he became a Supreme Court justice. This takes place in the 40s. And this is like well before that happened. So it's a nice chunk of a story to tell. And in handling it in a way that's, you know, that's not the most original thing in the world, but it is, like you said, an interesting approach to take to do a real life drama. But this is just basically about one incident in this man's life. And then we all know, you know, what happened to Thurgood Marshall as he went on. So, you know, this is something new. It's a different kind of story. All the acting is really, really, really good, particularly the two leads. And this Chadwick Boseman, I guess, is just going to be the go-to guy whenever you make movies about African-American, you know, historical figures. This is the guy that you're going to go. The guy you're going to go to.
I think it's time to spread the wealth a little bit. Let somebody else jump in there.
Yeah, I agree. But he's good though, man, and he's really good in this movie. And I happen to you know, have a weakness for courtroom movies as well. I think they're most of them, you know, a lot of them, if they're done well, can be very compelling. And I think this is a very compelling movie, anchored by some really good performances. So I'm recommending it. I think it's really good, and I hope more people see it.
You want to know Reginald, the last theatrical release that Reginald Hudlin directed?
What was
Irving's-
it?
Serving Sarah, Matthew Perry and Elizabeth Hurley,
which I happened to wake up to this morning. I'm not joking.
2002.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. It's been that long, huh?
With Amy Adams.
He's been doing mostly TV, pretty much TV stuff and video stuff ever since then. So
wow,
well,
so
this is a good, nice return for him.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, a solid movie. Okay, so that's Marshall. Colin and I both liked it. We got to take a break, guys. Hang on, okay.
Okay.
Eric and Colin are here. Lots more movies to talk about this morning. A little busy weekend for the movies. And we're going to talk more about it right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we're going to be doing some Halloween stuff, listening to some of the scary sounds, talking about some Halloween costumes. We're going to be doing like Halloween-themed stuff. You know, at least one topic, Halloween-y topic through the Halloween season here. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey-jokey time. Right now, Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to review the new movies, and we've got more movies to talk about. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Colin.
Hello.
All right, Eric.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Brawl in Cell Block 99.
All righty then. Okay. Well, this film stars Vince Vaughn as a former boxer who, as the movie opens, is laid off from his job at an auto garage. And as if his day just couldn't get any worse, he comes home and discovers that his wife might be cheating on him and may have also occasionally fallen off the wagon. But after he calms down, he gets his wits about him and, you know, really wants to make an effort for him and his wife, played by Jennifer Carpenter from Dexter. He decides that, you know, with no job, and he's going to have to figure out a way to get their family started. So he decides he's going to run drugs for a local drug dealer. I'll explain by eventually in a minute, he gets himself arrested. And by not giving up his, you know, the top guy, is sentenced more harshly, even though that his actions actually help the police out during one of these events. So he ends up going to prison, and things get worse from there as he is basically blackmailed into finding his way into another prison so he can take out someone for a local drug competitor. Otherwise, his family is not going to go the way that he hopes. And I use the word eventually because this is a film that is, while seemingly there's a lot of things that happen in it, it's actually a very slow and methodical film. It was written and directed by S. Craig Zahler, whose last film was the pretty terrific Bone Tomahawk, which if you have not seen Bone Tomahawk, we recommend that you go rent that as soon as you're done listening to this segment.
Yeah.
But this film is definitely an ex Craig Zahler film. Vince Vaughn's character, is, set up to be this kind of hulking brute. And it's a really interesting performance, actually, because, as I mentioned, that he has to calm down from this early scene. And if you've seen the trailer for this movie, you actually see him beat a car literally to death with his bare hands. It's a pretty remarkable introduction to this character, who, at one point is forced to actually strip down in prison. And it's not exactly, it's not the kind of, scene that we expect, because we expect Vince Vaughn to have, really bulked himself up for this performance, to really, just hit the gym or something like that. We're going to see some sort of amazing transformation. And we actually don't. And I think it's really kind of a testament to his performance that, that it's not, we assume, all the physicality in him. And certainly, in the fighting scenes that he has throughout the movie, he comes out on top in ways that you almost don't want to wish on your worst enemy, pretty much. People who remember, who have seen Bone Tomahawk and remember there's an infamous dispatching in that movie. I can't really say that anything comes close to feeling the pain of that movie, but Lord knows S. Craig Zahler really tries in this movie to really give the sort of the visceral impact of that particular scene. And he does it many times throughout the film. Again, I use the word eventually because, while I do like the movie and I am recommending it, this movie does run over 2 hours long. And it seems that there are, as basically a sort of a extended, kind of old school exploitation film. This is the kind of film that you normally like to say you didn't cut 10, 15 minutes here and there. Maybe if you would have cut maybe like 45 minutes, it would have been this really sort of impactful 90-minute exploitation film, which is not to say that, some of the elongated scenes don't work. They do, and they do serve a purpose at times. But there are times when it seems like he could really sort of literally get to the punch a lot sooner at times. I haven't even mentioned Don Johnson, who plays the warden of the other prison that he's eventually trying to get to. And it's a pretty great performance from him as well. And a guy that is just, you expect him to play this role in a particular way. And he just seems like a guy that is going to give you every bit of menace you expect in, a kind of a warden. But at the same time, you realize that he's kind of right in everything that he's doing, in a way. There's definitely a sadistic nature to him, but he just kind of feels like he's just kind of tired, and he's not going to take any BS from anyone. And some of the things that Vaughn does, eventually is going to lead to reaction that seems very justified in a way. This is an extremely violent film at times. I think it's a bit too long in the tooth for its own good, but I enjoyed it quite a lot. Not as much as Bone Tomahawk, but certainly enough to recommend.
Okay, hang on, and then I'll let you guys know what I thought of the movie. And it's Brawl in Cell Block 99, which is in theaters, and also you can see it on video on demand. So, all right, we'll talk about it more right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, jokey time. We're going to talk about some Halloween stuff, costumes and candy and all kinds of fun stuff, getting ready for that for Halloween. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Before the break, Eric Childress. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Colin.
Hello.
Eric Childress told us about Brawl in Cell Block 99, and I loved it. This guy's the real deal. This S. Craig Zahler guy. He's the why are his movies not getting the distribution that they deserve?
I have no idea.
I mean, I seriously don't understand that, because Bone Tomahawk went straight to VOD.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie kicks massive amounts of ass, and literally, and it went straight to this guy. Does this guy need a better distribution deal? Does he need a better agent? I mean, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, without question. I mean, Bone Tomahawk. I mean, I know that these films have gotten like a brief festival run, but usually right before they hit VOD.
Yeah.
Like when this movie premiered at the Toronto Film Festival this year, and I was going to see it, and I just ended up not feeling well to see The Late Show that night. And one of the reasons, I would have gone, would have toughed it out, but I was told, it's coming to VOD in, 3 weeks. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What is going on?
It's crazy. It's ridiculous. It's 2 hours and 12 minutes. So Tomahawk was long as well.
Yeah,
And he's got a very distinctive writing style, this guy. And
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can really, especially Don Johnson's character is written. It's very distinctive, the way that this guy writes, the way he directs, the use of violence. Vince Vaughn is great in the movie. It is a great performance. And very physical. And man, there were times when I was just like, oh my God. I mean, several times where I just like, what is my watching? I've never seen anything like this before. It's unrated, but it would have been, it could be close to an NC-17 for the amount of violence that's in this movie. And I mean, I don't know how many skulls get crushed and stepped on in this movie, man.
Yeah.
And you know, the brawl itself, the brawl in Cell Block 99, that doesn't happen till like the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, well, not even the first prison until like 45 minutes.
Right, I know. It's like, wait a minute, you call this movie Brawl in Cell Block, and it takes like an hour and 45 minutes to get to that. But I didn't mind at all. I mean, it is a long movie. It is a brooding film. It's very slowly paced and languid. But I thought it was great. And the explosive violence, very distinctly written and very, very well acted and really brutal, really brutal. But I think this is one of Vince Vaughn's best performances, man. I just think he's great in it, and it's Jennifer Carpenter is good in it, and the whole setup is really interesting. Don Johnson's having a blast, and and then the fights and the violence. I mean, I don't even know what to say. It's off the charts. It's insane. So that's Brawl in Cell Block 99, and this guy deserves to have his movies out on the big screen. I mean, they really need to be in theaters. This guy needs a better distribution. Deal. He needs a better agent. I don't know what's going on, but this guy's the real deal. So I loved it. Brawl in Cell Block 99. It's actually just like shocking at times, Eric, as you know.
Oh God, yes.
Oh my God. There were moments I was like, oh no, just like several.
Yeah, there's a moment like during the brawl scene in the final half hour of the movie.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
like he does something to one guy. And you think that that's as far as it can go.
Right.
And then the next guy gets something far worse.
It's just crazy, man. It's completely insane. Colin, did you see Bone Tomahawk?
Yeah, it was in my top 15 of that year.
Well, you got to see this one, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely. This is a must-see. This.
Yeah, I can't wait.
He's amazing. Okay. All right. Now, I didn't get a chance to see the Florida Project, and I'm very upset about it. I didn't have time. Colin, why don't you start with that, Florida Project?
Okay, well, this is a film the big star in the film is Willem Dafoe, who plays a manager of a residential motel in on a Florida strip just outside Disney World, where many of society's derelicts and outcasts go when they are otherwise homeless. But the film's real main character is a six-year-old girl named Mooney, played by Brooklyn Prince. She has a mom who's, covered in tattoos named Hallie, played by Bria Venete. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And the two of them live in this hotel room while the mom, she struggles day to day to try and make that week's rent. She is very much an unfit mother. She never disciplines her daughter and who gets in all manner of trouble. And she teaches her to basically steal and manipulate people for money. And, Mooney, the kid, she has other kids that she plays with, but she soon becomes a bad influence on them. So their moms don't let her hang out with them. And Willem Dafoe plays a guy with seemingly unlimited patience who has to clean up their mess while trying to run this establishment and clean it up in more ways than one. You watch this guy stick his neck out for this kid and this mother, and you really feel for him. I'm not sure any of us would have the kind of patience that he has for these people. So this is a movie directed by Sean Baker, who kind of burst on the scene with Tangerine a couple of years ago, which was the movie that was shot on the iPhone. I shouldn't say burst on the scene. He did stuff before that. But, I mean, that was kind of the big kind of breakthrough film. And this is a film that is kind of in that same spirit. It's done a little with a little more technical proficiency, a bigger budget, of course. But the sort of attention to detail and the attention, the sort of empathy he has for these characters is very much in the same vein as Tangerine. These are characters that you will hate in many places, but you're with them. You're compelled to stay with their story. And you do want to see, you know, how these little cliffhangers that just kind of take them from day to day, how they play out. I don't know much about Sean Baker's life. I don't know how he manages to tap into these stories of people who are just kind of on the outskirts of society. You know, this is a movie that paints a picture of characters that we know exist in real life, but are rarely depicted in film. And, you know, what he does with this is, I mean, you feel like you're watching a documentary about these people. And it's smart that he cast it the way he cast it. Willem Dafoe is the only recognizable name in this film. But, you know, there's a great authenticity for the rest of the cast who we don't recognize. And this Brooklyn Prince gives one of the best child performances I've seen in a long, long time. You know, the camera's on her almost the entire time. The camera is always at kid level. And you really get a sense of the playground that this strip of, you know, the street is for these kids. They just kind of wander away from the hotel and the world is theirs. You know, they go to all these kind of quirky little restaurants that have these bizarre exteriors, and they're shot, you know, very front and center, kind of like Wes Anderson movie. And
all right. Welcome back, everybody. That was weird. We lost Colin there for a second, and then we just cut to a break here. So, before the craziness happened, Colin told us what he thought of the Florida Project, which he loved and actually thinks is one of the best movies of the year. Let's get these guys back on. Welcome back, and let's find out, Eric. What did you think of the movie?
Yeah, I agree with so much of what Colin had just said about the movie, right down to how he was talking about how, you know, there are periods in this film where you actually, you know, will find dislike for some of these characters. But for me, that was mostly at the beginning of the film. You know, like Colin said, these are not exactly the most well-behaved children out there, and certainly with the lack of a more positive, adult influence on their lives are basically, you know, like Colin, you know, very eloquently said that, you know, they sort of treat this landscape like their own playground. And, I mean, the first thing that they do for fun is to go to the upper deck of the motel and spit on people's cars. So there's, you know, it takes a little bit of warming up to these children. But again, because the film tackles the subject matter through their eyes, we start to get a greater sense of not just their the exterior surroundings, but the more intimate surroundings that, you know, you certainly can influence this behavior. And some of that is dictated by her mother, who is basically just sort of a big child herself, and then as well as Willem Dafoe. And yeah, and Colin, you know, sort of hit the nail on the head by, you know, casting a lot of unknowns in, you know, these roles, but then having Willem Dafoe at the center of it. It only adds to himself as an authority figure, even though he's sort of is a reluctant authority figure, that, you know, he's just trying to keep his hotel, running and, completely managed and whatnot, keep the complaints to a minimum. But at the same time, you know, begins, you know, these are sort of his kind of like an extended family as well, that he is, you know, he wants them to pay their rent, but he, you know, doesn't want them to be harmed either. You know, follow the rules and we can have this relationship. There's my favorite sequence in the movie takes place about halfway through, where you really get the sense of what Willem Dafoe's character is willing to do to protect these people. It's a remarkable extended sequence. And, you know, this hotel, you know, this is, you know, again, it seems like something that's kind of like on the outskirts of society. It's where, you know, maybe, you know, a lower class goes to find refuge. But it is one of these hotels and this sort of these neighborhoods that are basically up the street and on the way to Disneyland. And that gives, or Disney World in this case, because it's Orlando. And that gives this film this really greater context and the sort of the illusion that Disney World can present, you know, the Magic Kingdom and whatnot, you know. But, you know, if you can't afford it, then it is just this, you know, this mystery, this myth that exists just sort of out of people's reach, but promises them a greater tomorrow. And the final scene of this movie is just beautiful and heartbreaking and magical. There's so much to like about this movie. I too cannot wait to watch it again, particularly to watch some of those early scenes through a different lens the second time. Willem Dafoe, I think, is going to be most likely going to be nominated for Best Supporting Actor. He should be. Could even win. He's that good. It really is one of the really special films of the year.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I'm very excited to see it. Okay, Eric, tell us about Happy Death Day.
Okay. Well, this is Groundhog Day meets Scream. And we'll be back after that sort of my review. Okay. So in the film, Jessica Roth, I think that's how you pronounce her last name, plays a sorority girl who wakes up in the dorm of the male dorm after a night of partying and whatnot. She can't remember a whole lot, and then goes about her day. It's her birthday, and is leading up to a big surprise party that night at the sorority. And before she gets there, though, she is murdered by a masked assailant. And as she is killed, she wakes up again in the dorm room, experiences extreme deja vu, walks through the same quads, sees the same people, hears the same noises, the same dialogue, everything. It is Groundhog Day. It is definitely Groundhog Day, and discovers that she has to, or at least assumes, that she has to discover who killed her and stop this person, prevent herself from dying before she's able to live her next day. So there's your plot for the movie. And this is a movie, you know, it's not even the first Groundhog Day-inspired film of the year. We had a movie called Before I Fall earlier this year, and obviously with Tom Cruise and The Edge of Tomorrow from a few years ago. This is a film that, this is an idea, obviously, that you could take in very different directions, and we've seen it work, like with Edge of Tomorrow, and we've seen it maybe not work quite as well with Before I Fall. Seems like, ripe for, a great way to approach this material. You know, take the Groundhog Day premise and, you know, combine it with a murder mystery that could seem like a lot of fun. The problem is, or the big problem is that the stuff you're actually going to go, you're going to see the movie for, basically, the sort of the murder mystery, is pretty remarkably stupid. And it's stupid in ways that you can't really describe without revealing all of its secrets. But there are a couple things in the movie, or moments in the movie, that suggest what this movie, how much fun this movie could have been in regards. And then as well, they introduce a new wrinkle into the play where her body actually seems to be absorbing the trauma of all these previous deaths. And that is just exiled so quickly from the movie that you wonder why they even brought it up in the first place. You know, they go from a doctor telling her, like, you really should be dead with all these things that seem to be going on in your body. And then the next thing she goes, like, well, I seem to get tired every time I, you know, wake up again. And that's it. And it's never really, you know, fully fleshed out. But the thing is that this film actually does find time to work in more of a Groundhog Day fashion, and I mean, you know, more in the Bill Murray sense, because I think the performance by Jessica Roth is actually quite good in the film. It actually prevents the film from really sinking to just a complete level of boredom, frankly, because the film is not really scary. It's not suspenseful in any which way, but seeing her sort of, you know, make the sort of the transformation from sorority girl to someone who is, you know, has some serious regrets about her mother's death and her relationship with her father and her friends and her roommates and all these things as well, and just treating people in a more decent fashion, I think that some of those later scenes actually work pretty well. But then you get back to the murder mystery, which is so remarkably dumb. Again, you can't even describe how stupid it is. The plot itself, the resolution of it, and the further twists that it takes. And so by the end, I was just like, well, I would really like to see more of this Jessica Roth, but I really don't want to see any more of Happy Death Day.
Okay. All right, we got a break here, guys. Hang on. We got the news coming up next here on 720 WGN. The push for the pennant. Count on your Cubs TV station, WGN TV, for complete coverage throughout the postseason. Watch WGN TV for everything Cubs this October. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a jokey time. And we're going to talk about some Halloween stuff and play a little scary sounds getting ready for Halloween. All right. The movie reviews. That's where we're at. Eric Childress and Colin Suter and I all review the new movies every Monday morning. And Eric, welcome back.
Hello.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, Colin, tell us about The Foreigner.
All right. Well, this is a thriller that stars Jackie Chan as, well, a foreigner in London, where he lives with his daughter, who is a college student. And at the start, I don't know if he lives there or not, or if he's visiting. But anyway, at the start of the film, they are in the wrong place at the wrong time when a bomb goes off in the city street. And Chan's daughter dies in that explosion, which was a bombing, and now wants to know the names of those who planted that bomb. Pierce Brosnan plays an important Irish political figure whose role is to try and keep the peace between England and Ireland after the peace accord that was signed 20 years ago. But he's a former IRA higher-up, so Jackie Chan figures he must know who is behind these bombings. So Chan spends much of the movie taunting Brosnan and making his life increasingly difficult so that he will give the names of those who killed his daughter. And so this is basically a revenge film with Jackie Chan, you know, just getting revenge on somebody who's denying knowing anything about what's going on. But of course, you know, it doesn't take long to figure out he must know something. The movie is a very typical revenge thriller, and Jackie Chan plays a character who is basically becomes a cross between John Rambo and Liam Neeson's character from Taken. You know, very unassuming at first, but pretty soon he's setting booby traps in the woods and using his very special set of skills, all physical, of course, because it's Jackie Chan, against his assailants. So the movie is being sort of marketed or it's being talked up because this is a very different kind of performance from Jackie Chan, who, of course, you know, getting older in the years and can't quite do the physical stuff he used to be able to do back in the day. So this is a more sort of grounded and emotional and, like I said, subdued performance that we're used to seeing from him. And the movie is pretty much kind of coasting on that because the rest of the stuff is so standard and by the numbers, and we're way ahead of the characters and we're way ahead of who to trust and who not to trust, that the when the movie takes shifts away from Jackie Chan, which it does quite frequently. I mean, Chan is kind of a supporting character in this movie. It just kind of feels dry. And I wish, you know, Chan's performance, which is good, was enough to recommend the movie. And, you know, for people who are going to see a Jackie Chan movie so we can see some, you know, real butt kicking from a guy who's, you know, kind of a master. There is that in the film, but it's not that much. And when it does happen, it feels pretty out of place because everything leading up to it is, you know, not the standard stuff that we see in a Jackie Chan movie. It doesn't have like a cold open action scene or anything like that. So that when we finally see him doing some, you know, real heavy physical work, it feels like, wait, who's this character all of a sudden? So it's kind of an awkward Jackie Chan movie. And not really that interesting apart from Chan's performance when he's not doing the physical stuff. The rest of it is pretty standard, you know, revenge thriller material that we've seen 100 times and not very special. So I wish I could, you know, give this movie a recommendation because I love a good Jackie Chan movie, but this is, you know, pretty weak stuff, actually.
You know, I even hesitate to call this a Jackie Chan movie, Colin.
Yeah.
I mean, he's barely in it. And you know, I mean, there's just a lot of Pierce Brosnan yelling. You know,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
It's just it, and then there's all these complicated subplots that have. There's a betrayal from the uncle, you know, the nephew betrayed him with his wife and the thing, and then he knows the IRA members and he doesn't, and then there's 8 million things happening. None of them are interesting. The most interesting.
Yeah, it really makes you appreciate the hour and 20 minutes it took for Taken to get going.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's like, I mean, the best thing in the movie is Jackie Chan. There's just no question about it, because it's like he really does a nice job playing this role. And, you know, I mean, Jackie Chan, most of the stuff he does is light and funny and goofy. But he really pulls this off. He has like 12 lines, though. You know, he's only got like 12 lines in the movie. And
right.
There are long stretches where there's no Jackie Chan. And it's just Pierce Brosnan yelling. I'm like, what? You know, they're making mysterious phone calls, and there's always this guy is, but who's this? And he's got like a bunch of guys at his country home who, you know, just wandering around. I'm like, what?
Well, I think the movie is trying to like get really deep into the politics of the Peace Accord, IRA, and trying to bring that back into the fold. I mean, when was the last time we had an IRA thriller?
No,
it's been a long time.
Very long time.
If you're going to do that, make that movie and then make the Jackie Chan movie separate from that.
Yeah, it just doesn't. And, you know, I don't know. It's based on a book wonderfully titled The Chinaman, which I'm really shocked that they changed the title to The Foreigner. But I mean, it's just it. There's just so much histrionics going on, and all of this like heated debates between, you know, the British officials and the Irish officials and all this stuff. And again, you know, the IRA and the troubles and all of those things are worthy, you know, to cover and to talk about and to make movies about. But this thing is just a mess, and you know, just so convoluted. By the time they're like, betrayal by my nephew and blah, blah, more Pierce Brosnan yelling and shooting guys in the kneecaps. I'm like, what am I watching here? And then every once in a while, Jackie Chan shows up. And then there's a big action scene at the end, you know, in an apartment where there are like 50 SWAT guys watching it. I didn't understand what was happening. I kind of didn't even understand what the hell was happening at the end of the movie. Except that Jackie Chan got to, you know, shoot people and kick people in the face. And you know, but and even on that level, it's disappointing because, you know, it's Martin Campbell directed this movie. Martin Campbell has made some good films in the past. He has. But he's not the kind of director who needs to, who can work with Jackie Chan. He just doesn't. He doesn't have the chops for it. No pun intended. But, yeah, I mean, Jackie Chan, best thing in the movie. Unfortunately, he's not in it all that much. And yeah, it's just a lot of Pierce Brosnan screaming. That's basically it. So I'm not recommending it either. I was very disappointed, but man, the theater was packed when I went. I mean, I couldn't believe how many people were in the theater. I was like, whoa. And everybody seemed to be disappointed at the end. So, all right. Eric.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Meyerowitz stories.
Okay, well, this is a new film from Noah Baumbach, and it stars Adam Sandler and Ben Stiller as brothers. Adam Sandler is bringing his daughter to hang with him and his father and his latest wife. The father's played by Dustin Hoffman, and the latest wife played by Emma Thompson. His daughter is going to college, and he's sort of seen her off, and they have a very very positive relationship. Mother is no longer in the picture. Divorced, I believe, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And the film is told in sort of like different chapters. There's Ben Stiller's character is kind of the favorite son of the Dustin Hoffman character, who is an artist, sort of a well known artist on the New York art scene. And Ben Stiller, sort of a financial analyst, works with putting together housing deals and things like that. And Dustin Hoffman and his wife are talking about selling this house that they grew up in. That Adam Sandler is very opposed to getting rid of. And the film is not really sort of rooted in any plot structure, really. This is a comedy and drama of manners and brothers and fathers and son relationships, all these guys working out their various issues with one another. Noah Baumbach, for me, I've had kind of a sometimes like, sometimes hate relationship with this guy's movies. But this one might very well be his best. It's a tough call right now between this and Greenberg for me, but this one is still very fresh in my memory. And there's a lot of things that I liked about this movie, starting with the performances. Adam Sandler, who, when given the right material and puts his mind to it, can be a really terrific actor, as we've seen really not often enough, frankly. He's especially with the stuff that he's been doing on Netflix as of late, just hanging with his old friends and goofing off. It's really kind of a shame that he would waste himself in stuff that he must seem to think his fans want to see, but many of us who have even liked some of those movies, some of those earlier films in the past, I would much rather see him do more grown-up adult stuff like this. That can still be really funny, and this movie at times is really funny, not just a really good performance from Adam Sandler, but also Ben Stiller, who. The relationship between the two brothers, we've seen rival brothers in the past, but Baumbach sort of taps into the more subtle rivalry that happens between siblings. It's not necessarily one great big thing that sort of puts these people on different paths. It's really kind of a series of little things that have just sort of built up over time, and all of them seem to relate to their father. And again, we've seen movies with sons and prickly fatherly relationships, and the performance by Dustin Hoffman is so key in this movie, in that there is this genteel kind of New Yorker artist, character in there that is clearly pretentious and full of himself, but just has that fatherly appeal that is just there to sort of drive you nuts at any given moment. Dustin Hoffman is so good in this movie. He is so funny and so on point. And there are scenes in this movie that alternately can be, really funny and then really heartbreaking in the same scene. There's, people who watch this movie, and there's some sort of weird edits that Baumbach does to sort of break up scenes. He sort of cuts in many times before a scene seems to be even done. It's just right in the middle of a line, he cuts into the next chapter, the next scene. But I think that is, it's clearly very purposeful, because it leads to a moment later on in the film, where Adam Sandler kind of has a kind of a goodbye sequence that I think is very powerful. And there's a scene, it's rare that a movie that is setting up its characters can have a moment so kind of emotionally impactful. But there's a moment very early in this movie where Sandler gets to do something that we've seen him do many times before in the past, which is sing a song. And he has this moment where he sings a song, what he calls a Meyerowitz composition between him and his daughter, that is so beautiful, so powerful. Very early on, it says everything you want to know about these characters, and it sets you on a path to want to see these people make it, through whatever chapter they're going through in their life. All of them have kind of little mysterious illnesses that are padded out throughout the movie. But not in that typical movie way where we're expecting one of them to succumb to one of these illnesses. It's just this part of this character trait that might be symbolic of the fears and the familiar trauma that they've built up throughout all their lives. I really like this film a lot, and that's saying a lot for me with Baumbach.
Okay, hang on a second, Eric and Colin. We're going to take a break here. We got weather, we got traffic, and then afterwards, Colin will tell you what he thought about the Meyerowitz stories and what I thought of it as well. That's all coming up right after this, and I've got the weather right here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And before the break, Eric told us what he thought of the Meyerowitz stories, new and selected. And now we'll want to find out what Colin thought. Colin, what did you think?
Yeah, it's a really terrific film. And I've been kinder to Baumbach's work than Eric. I think I'm looking at his filmography right now. I think I liked about 60 or 70% of his films.
Yeah, I like him the most of the three of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this one is definitely one of his best movies. And I agree with everything Eric said about, Sandler. I think Baumbach really knows how to use Ben Stiller. I think this is one of Ben Stiller's best performances. And I think these two are forming a sort of actor-director relationship that I think has been really interesting to watch, starting with Greenberg, and then there's While We're Young. This movie is definitely, stylistically, I really like a lot of the choices that Baumbach made, and I think a lot of the dialogue here, the rhythm of it, feels like more of a calmed-down version of Mistress America, which was sort of hyperactive in its dialogue delivery. It's kind of doing an old-fashioned Preston Sturges kind of thing, and this is kind of like that, too, in spots, but it's a little more disciplined. And I think it's a really terrific film, and I'm glad it's available for people out there to see it. It's on Netflix right now. It's not in theaters, I don't think.
It's at the Landmark. It's at
Okay. So, but either way, we should definitely check it out.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, I loved it, and Adam Sandler is really great. I really want to make sure that we mention Elizabeth Marvel, who plays the sister, Jean.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She is so good in this movie. It is a wonderful performance. And Emma Thompson is reliably Emma Thompson. You know what I mean? She just she just rules. Hoffman, I mean, I just, what can you say about Dustin Hoffman? And there's a wonderful scene between Sandler and Ben Stiller, where they, it's your typical brothers fighting each other. It's one of the funniest scenes. I mean, it's so that's the way brothers would slap each other.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean.
It's like, it reminded me a little bit of how the fantastic fight scene at the end of Big Night, which felt like real brothers. You know what I mean? That's how brothers. Mm-hmm. That's how they would fight, and that's how it felt. And Sandler's really, really good in the movie, and the relationship that he has with his daughter, played by Grace Van Patten, is really wonderful and funny, and the take on filmmaking that they
her
student films, fantastic. So all the way around, I mean, this is just great. It's also an interesting portrayal of New York, as a lot of his movies are. And Dustin Hoffman has some really wonderful moments in this movie. There's a fantastic scene where he's out, they're having lunch. He and Ben Stiller are having lunch in a restaurant, and a guy keeps putting stuff on their table. and then he accuses the guy of stealing his jacket. It's just little things like that. It's beautifully handled. It's a great, great, great cast and a really terrific movie. Very, very entertaining and really moving and really funny. So I think it's great. And I saw it on the Netflix, and so there you go. And I really thought it was terrific.
Yeah, and actually, like Brawl in Cell Block 99, it actually has another great scene of people trying to destroy a car.
Yeah, oh my God, hilarious. Hilarious. Oh man. Okay, and I also just want to mention really quickly, I adore how much they loved Pam the nurse. That was one of my favorite. Yeah.
That all that stuff rings true. All that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The doctor stuff. Oh. And like, wait a minute, you're going to China for 3 weeks?
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
Really, really great stuff. A really terrific movie. So there you go. All right, next week, what do we got? We got Breathe. We've got Only the Brave, The Snowman. And, oh, yeah, Boo 2, A Madea Halloween.
Yeah, enjoy that, Colin.
Yeah.
All right, Doug.
Yeah.
So are we out of time here? Yeah, we're out of time. By the way, the box office, Happy Death Day, 26.5. You called it last week.
Yeah.
So
A lot of money.
And that was basically the only one that made a lot of bank this week. So thanks, guys, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Okay, there you go. Bye. There's Eric, and there's Colin. Busy week at the movies this week. All right, we'll take a break, and we got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.